Hey, hey, have you heard? It's your host, Chris DeMakes, and I'm headed back to the Punk Rock Museum. That's right, the powers that be have invited me back, and I couldn't be more excited. Allow me to be your guide as we wind through 5 decades of punk rock history, merchandise, and memorabilia. Cinco de Mayo weekend, Friday, May 3rd, Saturday, May 4th, and Sunday, May 5th. There'll be 2 tours each day at 12:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. And the best part for me is you. Your stories, your questions, your experiences. Yep, some of you old punkers have taught this guy a thing or two on these tours, and I love it. Head over to thepunkrockmuseum.com for tickets. Don't miss out. Only 30 spots per tour. Get your tickets now at thepunkrockmuseum.com.
Hey everybody, first off today I'd like to thank each and every one of you for making Chris DeMakes a podcast such a rousing success. I couldn't do it without you, the listeners. It's been an amazing ride so far, and I can't thank you enough. As most of you know, I play guitar and sing for the band Less Than Jake. And most of the guests so far on the podcast have been guests from the punk and ska world. And you know, since the beginning, the origins of the show, I've always wanted to branch out and get into other styles of music. I'm fascinated by songwriting. Any genre, any style of music, as long as it's a good song and there's a great story, I want to talk about it. And Chris DeFalios brought up an artist from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania named Sierra Sellers. Sierra is an amazing singer, comes from a R&B and soul background, and she picked her song Grown to discuss today. Sierra wanted to make a song where the bass was the driving force. Her lyrical inspiration for this song was she was pissed off at her boyfriend on the day that she was writing it, which is always good for inspiration. Grown is about not being too grown to cuss somebody out when you're upset. She chose Grown because it was the most relevant to when she was 19 years old and living on Ophelia Street in the Oakland part of Pittsburgh. Sierra said that she'd like to share with young women that it's not impolite to stand up for yourself and speak your mind. Sierra considers herself an old soul, and her voice sounds very mature for her 25 years of age. Sierra compared lyrics to tarot cards and that the listeners can interpret the lyrics to mean what they need them to mean. And Sierra and I had a lot of parallels in our lives that that we talked about during the show. Both of us came from households that encouraged music. We both played sports and considered college sports, but sports eventually took a backseat to music. But the parallels stopped there when she said that she was shy, which I am definitely not. And she also talks about how she's had to work very hard to get over stage fright. For all this and much more, stay tuned.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast.
Sierra, are you in Sewickley right now?
No.
You're not. Okay. Do you live there anymore?
I don't. No.
You
don't.
No. For yeah. Those listeners that don't know, Sewickley is outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and that's where Sierra is a native of. I'm reading her bio from WYEP, a public radio station in Pittsburgh. I've read a lot about you, okay? I've done my research. Are you in Pittsburgh?
I am in Pittsburgh, yes.
Cool. Sierra chose the song Grown, which was released this past January. And tell us a little bit about this particular track. Set it up. Where were you at? What was your frame of mind when you wrote it?
So I was at the studio, at a studio in North Versailles, and I was working with Ryan Tedder and Aaron Karsh, aka the Dropouts, and we were looking for a song. I told them that I wanted like a bass heavy song, like the bass to be the driving force instead of, you know, like four on the floor drums. And so they came up with this somewhat simple beat, and I was sitting there writing into it. And honestly, I was so pissed off that day. I was so irritated with my boyfriend at the time. And, you know, I'm 25 years old. I was 23 or 24 when I wrote the song. And there's this idea that, like, you always have to be mature all the time as an adult. And, like, sometimes you just get so pissed off where you're like, you know what? I am not too grown to cuss somebody out and act a fool when I'm upset. And that's what the song is really about. And, yeah, it just came from a place of frustration of, you know, just being fed up.
I got you. Well, you give me permission to act like a 12-year-old today. That's good. sometimes, you know, the best inspiration for a song is pain or is anger. You know, that'll get you to a place where pen goes to paper real quick and it kind of spills out. Now, when you heard the bass groove, which I love, I think it's awesome. And was that something written by the Dropout production team?
Originally, yes, but then Johnny Good, he did his own little version of it. So that's live bass on there by Johnny Good.
It sounds like it. It didn't sound programmed. It sounds like it's actual. Yeah, that's awesome. So you heard the bass groove, and you were pissed at your boyfriend, and then from there, did you kind of? Did it happen quickly, or did you kind of write a verse and sit on it and come back the next day? Do you recall?
Oh no, I wrote it probably within like an hour and a half, and it was recorded within like two and a half hours. Yeah,
that fast.
Yeah, when I have a concept, and you know, the idea that I have, the concept I have matches what I feel, I'm a fairly quick writer. Because it's just, I mean, I don't try to overthink it, because, I mean, you said before that the best inspiration or music comes from like how you're feeling or from pain. And so if I just write honestly, then I don't have to think about it. I just write how I feel. So I literally, what I wrote was how I felt. And somewhat what I said to my boyfriend at the time. It was funny too, because I came home from the studio in like a completely different mood, just so happy and excited about this song, and I wanted him to hear it. He just looked at me like, this is about me. I was like, nah.
what did he think of it? What was his reaction?
He was like, this is really good, but he smiled like, this is about me, right? And I was just like, no, don't worry about it.
This is really good.
I'll tell you when
you're
older.
This is really good, but I'm a bastard. That's awesome. So when you put pen to paper, you said it was done within like an hour or so. How different did anything change when you got in front of the microphone? Because a lot of times when I write, I'll blast some lyrics out real quick, or, you know, and I'll think they're great, and you know, they very well could be great. But I get up to try to sing them, and there'll be a word that just doesn't sing right, or there's too many syllables. Was it pretty much all there, or did you have to go and tweak a couple things?
I know exactly what you're talking about. I do that often. But for this song, it was pretty simple. The harmonies, though, the way I sing the song live is how I wrote it. The harmonies in the song, at the part where it's like, you, if you want to know that part where it's like super breathy. Ryan Tedder, one of the producers, he was like, let me just try something. And he kind of directed me on that part. Well, not kind of, he did direct me on that breathy pre-chorus.
Okay. Yeah. And that's exactly what I have in my notes here. That's what I would call a pre-chorus, that part. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you, got in there and you said you tracked the song pretty quickly. So did you, I know you wrote the lyrics, did the production team, did they come up with the arrangement, or were you involved with that, with like, hey, this is going to be the first verse, this is the pre-chorus?
I did that. And I mean, they basically, we just started completely from scratch. Like, it was a fairly, I think the whole session might've been like 3 hours.
Wow.
Because it was just like bass, drums, keys.
Yeah, and I wouldn't picture that. I mean, there's not, you know, the structure of this song is and this isn't a bad word or a bad thing. It's a pretty straightforward, simple arrangement. You know, you got your first verse after a short intro, the pre-chorus, the breathy part you were speaking of. It goes to the first chorus, comes right back to a second verse, your pre-chorus, then your second chorus. And then basically it goes back to the verse where you have your outro where you just repeat the refrain of "ain't too grown, might be grown" two times. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't go to like a bridge crazy departure. And was the arrangement, I'm assuming if you did it that quick, the arrangement kind of was what it was. You didn't really like have time to overthink it.
No, and I didn't feel like it needed it. I mean, a lot of one of the examples I gave during that session was BMO, Break Me Off by Ari Lennox.
Sleeping all day, chiefing, rolling, bitty, okay.
And if you listen to that song, it's a very similar structure, and it's a driving baseline as opposed to our more full sounding song. Mm-hmm. There's something about it that's hollow yet comforting. Like it punches you in the gut, but it doesn't necessarily like, I don't know. It's difficult to describe. It's simple, but I think it makes the point.
Yeah. And I don't think there needed to be anything more. And I've listened to the song now probably a dozen times, and it's just so catchy and it just works. And it's 2 minutes and 52 seconds, which it's interesting. There's some songs that are like 5 minutes, but don't seem like they're that long. And then there's other songs. This is a pretty short song, but it feels so complete that I was surprised. I thought this was way over 3 minutes. I couldn't believe the time when I listened to it the first time. And I think you're right. To me, it stands on its own. It didn't need a departure bridge part or some breakdown part or anything. I think it would have taken away from what's there.
Yeah, it was pretty raw. It was a raw day, raw session.
And now you picked this song, and I'm just going to point blank. What, you know, and you have a number of tunes that I checked out online. Why this one? Why did you feel that you wanted to discuss this song besides it's about your boyfriend?
So, although I wrote this at a different time about a different situation, upon reflection about my EP Ophelia and what that is about, Grown is the most relevant song to that period of my life. 19 years old, partying, well, my version of partying, which is like a beer or two on Ophelia Street in Oakland. Where, you know, I have this newfound independence and freedom and I feel like I'm grown, but if my dad knew where I was at and what I was doing, my A star star would be beat. So it's this like paradigm of, you know, transitioning from childhood or adolescence into young adulthood. And that's also what the song is about. It's like the first verse is, I'm not too grown. So if you kind of look at the second verses from my perspective, I'm not too grown to hurt your feelings. I'm not too grown to do this or that. And the second verse is, you're not too grown, as in we, the young people, aren't too grown to get corrected, to learn something, because we haven't learned everything yet.
Right. So, it's interesting that you meshed that idea with being angry with your boyfriend, and it kind of mm-hmm. they were able to come together and be congruent within the context of the song.
Mm-hmm. And I mean that time on Ophelia, in that time when I was 19 years old, I had gotten out of a pretty bad relationship. You know, when you're that young, you think that your boyfriend or your girlfriend is the person you're going to spend the rest of your life with. So it was pretty devastating to me when I found out quickly that was not the case. And I was treated, you know, pretty poorly in that relationship. And it took a lot of maltreatment, if you will, to stand up for myself. And my manager asked me the other day, he's like, if you could teach somebody something, and I mentioned that I would love to share with young women that it's not impolite to stand up for yourself. It's not impolite to speak your mind and say, you will not treat me this way. I deserve better. And if you're not going to treat me better, then you are not welcome in my space, in my life.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, that's, it's got to feel good to kind of have that, that self-empowerment about yourself, that realization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, the first verse is, ain't too grown to hurt your feelings. Might be grown, but it's appealing. Ain't too grown. Don't get it twisted. Might be grown, but ain't shit different. Yeah. And it's so funny, because like I was watching the video, and like that came across, and I was like, whoa, she just said shit, you know. But like, I just didn't picture that in this type of song, and I don't know any other way to say it than that. It kind of struck me, but it, that word needs to be there, though. It really drives it home. It really drives it home to what you're saying, and it kind of keeps it raw.
Yeah, it's like, I'm nice, but don't play with me.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
That's like, exactly what it means.
I see your angelic face in the video, and you're smiling, and you know, and then that comes out of your mouth.
Yeah.
And I noticed when reading your bio of some of your influences, Destiny's Child being one of them, and you know, very familiar with them, and their production is just insane. Did you, when you got into the production of this song, obviously the bass line was what started it off, the inspiration. And then as the track was building, did you talk with the production team, the Dropouts, did you talk with them about what you wanted it to sound like, or how you wanted it to feel production-wise?
So every producer that I've worked with is like completely different. There are some sessions that I go into and they play me songs and I just pick from them. And that's how we work best together. There are some producers where I go into the studio and I play along with them, and or I sing what I want the bass to be, or mimic how I want the drums, things like that. With these guys, I've worked with Aaron Karsh specifically since about 2015 or 16.
Okay.
And he knows very much what chords I like, what sounds I like. And Ryan Tedder is just a beast. Like, he is just, I mean, they both are, but Ryan is a very hard worker and understands so much. So those two together, they're a force. So this session, I just gave examples of what songs that I was interested in at that time. And quite frankly, I was a little distracted by my own personal situation that I kind of sat back in this session as far as the production side of it and was like, I like that, I don't like that.
So they, you know, like I said, I was talking about production a moment ago. You know, Destiny's Child, they had three vocalists, and their production was very interesting with vocals. And I noticed that, especially when it got to the pre-chorus, you were speaking of the breathy part, the "you, if you only knew what I do for you, you, if you only knew what I do for you," repeats it twice. I noticed that your vocals go into stereo mode, where like they're in the right and left speaker. If you only knew. And then they'll come back center with your lead vocal, and it's like kind of going in and out. And that was a really, really cool vocal thing. And I'm assuming that's something that the Dropouts brought to the table.
Yeah, that part specifically was Ryan. I remember him being really focused at that time and was kind of just like, I want to try something, trust me. And I did, and I loved it. And I thought that he was like, just make it as breathy as possible. And so there were probably like 5 or 6 takes of each like layer of each, what's the word I'm looking for? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Each vocal of part.
Each
track.
So, so well, I did, and they're all stacked. So that's why, that also why it sounds so full. And I actually do that a lot in my background vocals. The minimum for me is like 3 per line, or 3 per note that I'm singing.
Yeah, no. And I mean, the production on this, it stands up with, you know, anything that's out there. I think it sounds amazing. You should be really, really proud of that. Like I said, the vocal quality, the tone of everything is crystal clear. It just sounds punchy. It sounds crisp, and it sounds modern. But it's interesting, you know, I'm a little older than you, and I hark back to hearing stuff. My parents are really big into Motown and of course the late 70s, early 80s and stuff, just dance music and stuff. This has like a quality, an older sense. And I was reading in your bio how you say you're an old soul. I mean, you don't sound like you're 25 when you sing. I don't mean that in any way weird.
No, just, thank you.
No, it has a very mature quality to it. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, again, like I was saying that it sounds very modern, but at the same time, you know, there's something that seems old to this to me.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been an old soul. I've always been told that I was wise beyond my years. I don't know where I get that from, honestly, but I was actually telling a story to somebody about how I was in camp when I was a kid and there was a talent show. And I knew I wanted to sing since I was in preschool. And I got up and I sang Jill Scott. And nobody knew who Jill Scott was at 9 years old in Swickley, Pennsylvania. Like, those kids had no idea. And they all started laughing at me because not only am I singing Jill Scott, but I always have had this like deep, soulful voice. And so the camp counselors who were older were like so impressed, but the kids were like, why does she sound like a dude?
Oh man. And you don't want to sound like a dude when you're that young.
Yeah, like I'm saying, let's take a long walk. And they're like, sing some Ashanti. Like, you know what I'm saying? So they were very unimpressed. It was somewhat discouraging, but I've always been that way. I've always loved that neo soul music. And and also growing up in church and listening to gospel music.
That's the exact word you just took it out of my mouth. That neo soul. That's what this just sounds like. You know, like soul. Like it's timeless. Again, it sounds modern because of the production, but this sounds timeless. It sounds like something that could have been recorded. This vocal in 1979, and I mean that with
thank you
with as much admiration as I can. It's awesome. We get into the chorus, and you know, there's some stuff in here that I'm pretty sure I know what it's saying, but that's what I love about lyrics is they can be abstract and they can mean something else. But the first lyric in the chorus, if it's like that, go pack, then slide, boy, bye. So I'm assuming when I read that, if it's like that, go pack, it means get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Then slide, then bail, bye, yeah. See you later. Okay. Ain't keeping me up at night. I tried to give a little peace of mine, M-I-N-E, which I love the play on words in a moment. If it ain't facts, my bad, I'll ride. Boy, why? You keeping me up at night. I tried to get a little peace of mind, M-I-N-D, at the end. Was that play of words there when you first penned it, or was that something you got up to the mic like, I'm going to change mine to mine the second time?
No, I wrote that like that.
Cool.
And I mean, the pre-chorus, it's so weird because when I write songs, I write them. It's like I'm narrating a music video or a movie or a play. Like, genuinely, I have a very childish imagination in the best way. I know we're talking about being immature in the song, but genuinely,
that's cool.
In the best way possible. And so the pre-chorus is actually, if you think about in a play or a musical where the main character, like the stage goes dark and there's a spotlight on them and they're kind of bearing their soul. So that's what the pre-chorus is meant to be like. And that's part of my frustration because this is somebody that I love deeply, but even when I communicate how I feel or what I expect, and it's very simple, they're not meeting that. They're not, you know, holding up their end. And it's hurtful to me because it's like, if you only realized how much I care, if you only realized everything and anything that I would do for you, that love would have to reciprocate. How could it not? So then it goes into the chorus where the anger comes out. And yeah. It's like, all right, if it's not going to reciprocate, if you're not going to do this, go pack, then slide.
Yeah.
And if you think I'm wrong, I'll bounce. Like, I have no problem, but it needs to reciprocate. Yeah. And then the peace of mind is I'm giving you a piece of myself. I'm making sacrifices to enhance your life, which in return will enhance our lives. And the second part, I tried to get a little peace of mind. I tried to talk about this. I tried to work it out. But if you're not going to work it out, if you're not going to make changes, then I'm not going to keep myself up worrying about this situation anymore.
Yeah, then I need to move on.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. The second verse now, of course, has the ain't too grown pretty much every line, and it switches with might be grown the second line. But it says, ain't too grown to get corrected, might be grown, but you ain't perfection. Ain't too grown to learn a lesson, might be grown, but you'll get neglected. Set that up for us.
Yeah, so that part, like I said earlier, that part is talking directly to them. So about them, that person, and saying, basically, I know that you're an adult, you're a little bit older than me, but I will tell you about yourself and you will get corrected. You're not perfect. There are things that I'm not happy with that need to be worked on. And like, if it doesn't happen, then you're going to lose me. You'll get neglected. And I always say that in my relationships, because I do like to voice my opinion. And when I'm upset about something, having gone through a relationship where I became somewhat submissive out of fear of, you know, hurting their feelings or anything like that, or out of fear of losing them because I thought it was impolite, like I was saying earlier. So now when I'm feeling upset about something, I'm not going to like scream at the person, but I am going to say, hey, I didn't appreciate this. And in this particular situation, it was like, it was always an argument. It was always a fight. And so I always said, you know, be worried when I stop bringing things to your attention.
Like, yeah. When they get
ignoring you. Yeah.
Yeah. When you get the silent treatment, that's when the oh shits go off. Uh-oh.
Yep.
The line here, and this is what I love about lyrics. When I read this when I was listening to it, I thought this was from first person, the last line here in the second verse, might be grown, but you'll get neglected. Like I myself, you know, I might be grown, but I'll get neglected. But you were referencing your boyfriend that mm-hmm. you'll get neglected from me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
I probably sound like a horrible person. I'm really nice.
No, I love it. I love to get into the lyrics because you it's fascinating to know where somebody else is coming from, because you could read, and that's why everybody, they get a different emotional take from a song. 30 people can listen to the same song and all get something different out of it.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I try to write too in a general way. I think about writing songs as far as lyrics are concerned, similar to tarot cards, in the sense that they give you a general, you know, a general like outline or answer. And then it's up to the reader or the listener to interpret it to their own intuition, to their own feelings. Like we all have that voice within us that tells us what's really going on or how we feel. And there's always something on the outside that makes it click and makes us interpret things in the way that we want to hear them. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So I try to keep my music general so that the listener can hear what they want and take away from the song what they want or what they need at that time.
Yeah, and there's definitely, you know, generalities here there is some stuff that I've pointed out that I just didn't know, and that you cleared mm-hmm. up about, like the neglected line. Like I thought that was you talking first person. It's like, no, that's the SOB boyfriend. Which is cool, you know, cuz I didn't take that away from that line. from there, it goes back into the breathy part, we'll call it, the pre-chorus, which mm-hmm. is which is the same as the first pre-chorus. And then it goes back into the chorus where you're telling them to pack up and bail if that's the way things are going to be. And it's not a double chorus. It's just the same length as the first chorus. And then mm-hmm. we go to what I would call an outro, which is basically the verse. And you just repeat twice, ain't too grown, might be grown. And then it kind of just fades out from there. Although, and I wanted to ask you about something. When I went and looked at your live video of the song where you're standing in the stairwell, at the very end, and just this is out of curiosity, you only say ain't too grown, might be grown one time at the end. Was there a reason for that? Was that before the song was recorded? Probably not, because you recorded the song first.
Yeah, if I'm honest, that was the Empty Space Project.
Okay.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was.
It was so cold.
You're like, I'm not singing another line. Get me the hell out of here.
Literally, it was so cold that day that it was actually such a frustrating day. And I tried to be, you know, I was a good sport about it because it was such a cool opportunity and I was so grateful, but it was freezing and it took so long in between takes to, you know, just keep going. So I couldn't like stay or get warmed up because it was so cold.
It's
and
funny.
I couldn't hear myself whatsoever because I didn't have headphones. So I didn't hear what I sounded like until it was done.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, well, it sounds great. And it's funny you should say that, because at the end, I'm assuming they're the producers that were on the set. They were like, no, that was it. That was really good. I think we got it that time. And everyone seemed overly excited, probably because you all wanted to get out of there. It was freezing.
And towards the end, I was like, hey, guys, I'm sorry to be like this, but can we please, like, because they would want to look at everything right after. And I was like, can we please just maybe do like 3 or 4 in a row and then look at things, because it's really cold right now. And I feel bad. I mean, for me, vocally, it was difficult, but I was thinking about my bass and keys player and how their fingers had to be like frozen and made it hard for them to play.
Well, I'm going to send you a space heater for next time. Okay. I think.
Yeah. But it was so cool. We just wanted to like get through it because we were really excited about it, but we were definitely like, damn, that was cool.
Yeah.
As
well,
hell.
I wouldn't have known. The vocal performance sounds great. It sounds awesome. But yeah, I had noticed that, because like I said, I listened to this many times, and I noticed, wait a second, she only said ain't too grown, might be grown once at the end. Why didn't she repeat that? And you're like, I need to get out of here.
It is freezing.
I was cold. That makes sense.
Because it was an abandoned warehouse, and it was actually warmer outside.
Well, no.
The sun wasn't coming in or anything, so.
Well, too, a lot of times when you write songs, and I know this, I'm in a band, and I'll write songs that, you know, that end up getting recorded, and you'll change them live, you know, for whatever mm-hmm. reason. And in this case, I'm thinking maybe she changed it because now that you told me about how fast the recording went, maybe you're like, yeah, it should have only been once. It shouldn't have been twice. So that's why I brought that up.
It is different live, though. When I sing it, I change it up a bit. I think it's better when things sound different than how they are recorded. It's like a unique experience for those who attend the show.
How many people are in the live band?
It is just myself, 4 of us, myself, Alan Bell on drums, Denzel Chismar Oliver on bass, and Remy Vega on keys. Sometimes I'll have Feral Cat, who's a saxophone player. He also plays flute, play with us too. But typically it's the four of us. Yeah.
Are you guys run any tracks besides that, or just the four of you?
No. It's just us. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. A couple more things I wanted to touch on. When I was reading your bio, I saw some very interesting similarities and parallels with you. And, I got a few years on you. I've been in the music business for, geez, I don't know if I should say this, longer than you've been alive. but when I was reading it, I'm like, oh my gosh, here's a 25-year-old lady from Pittsburgh that I totally see these parallels. And the first one was you stressed the importance of family and growing up with music in the home. I came from a household that was just, my mom and dad are musicians, and it was just encouraged. It was part of our life. We would sing in the car. It was every day we were entrenched in music. Tell me a little bit about that with having music in the home.
So I had a very unique upbringing. My mother passed away when I was about 5 years old. And I can remember she sang. I don't remember what her voice sounded like. Apparently there are some recordings or videos of her singing in church that I would love to hear, but my family can't find them. But I've been told that she sounded like a mixture of like Whitney Houston and Alicia Keys, which sounds crazy to me. So I'm like, I need to hear this. But so I got my gift from her. But she was Black. My dad is white. My dad listened to mostly country music. So I grew up on like Travis Trait and Willie Nelson and like Toby Keith, that Willie Nelson and Toby Keith album. The one song was it Whiskey for My Men, Beer for My Horses.
Right.
That was my jam. And then I forget who the singer is. It Charlie Daniels who did the Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Yeah.
Yep. That was also my jam. So during the week I was with my dad and my sister listening to that kind of music. But on the weekends, I would be with my aunt or my grandmother on my mother's side. And that's where I would hear the, Fred Hammond gospel music or Kirk Franklin gospel music and Jill Scott and Alicia Keys, Erykah Badu, D'Angelo, Robin Thicke, and, all of these kind of underground up and coming artists, Common. So I had a really diverse, music.
Well, I would say you don't get much. Yeah. You don't get much more opposite end of the spectrum than Charlie Daniels or Whitney Houston. I mean, that's.
I actually sang the national anthem when I was in ninth grade before a Charlie Daniels concert.
Oh wow! Well,
it's
so cool though to have an open musical palette like that, though, to be open-minded, because just as much as you can pull an inspiration from a Destiny's Child song, I'm sure that there's been times when you've been writing either lyrics or you're singing something, you're like, ooh, there's a little Charlie Daniels in that, or there's a little Willie Nelson in that.
They are great. Like, I listened to the one song, I think it is the most, like, one of the most genius lyrics or lyrical, experiences that I've ever heard. And it's that one song, Redneck Woman. Some people look down on me, but I don't give a rip. I stand barefooted in my own front yard with a baby on my hip, cause I'm a redneck woman. I ain't no high class broad. I'm just a product. That song, whoever wrote that song, I don't know, is it Gretchen Wilson who sings it? Whoever wrote those lyrics is a G. They are so smart and they're so clever. And that is one of my, although I wouldn't say that I'm a huge country fan, I can appreciate it. And I am a fan of those lyrics. That country music is lyrically some of the best music that I've listened to. I love it.
Yeah, it's some of the most descriptive lyrics ever is country, for sure. I want to talk about a couple more parallels. You were very big into basketball, into sports, and I was into baseball. You talk about how you may have, you were maybe going to play in college, and then the one college you were going to go to, they stated that if you quit, you would lose your scholarship. And so you went with another college that you played for a couple weeks and then you ended up dropping out, but you were able to keep your scholarship. I didn't play ball in college, but I was close. I played all through high school, and then at some point, music just superseded anything sports related. And you kind of talk about that in your bio, how music just became just this all encompassing thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I feel really bad, but, there was no money for me to go to college. And I wasn't a good student. I struggled in school. I mean, especially towards later in my high school when I had a job and then I also played sports, there's no time. I feel so bad for kids these days because it starts even earlier. There's no time to do it all and be good at it all, but then you're expected to be. So I caught kind of like the beginning of that. And so I got my first full ride offer to a Division II school for basketball when I was a junior in high school. I didn't sign. I wanted to wait, obviously, and see, because if you Division II, it was an athletic scholarship. So if I quit, like we said, I would lose that scholarship. Yeah. But then I got some Division III offers, and Division III, they're not allowed to give out sports scholarships. So they essentially like find you and help you through the whole scholarship or with like funding. Assistance like process, and basically find you the most random things, and you kind of get priority because you're going to be an athlete, which sounds horrible, but it's the truth, and I think we all know that. Yeah. So I had some Division II offers that were full ride books and everything, but I always wanted to do music and I never got to. I was shy about it. I was scared to, you know, be myself in a place like Swickley. There wasn't many people that looked like me or were in my financial situation. So I saw college as a way for me to finally be able to be myself and not feel ashamed of it. Not because I personally felt ashamed, but because I was shamed by others. And
good for you. I just want to say, you know, the fact that you didn't get good grades, you really didn't like school, but you knew that, you know, if I want to quote unquote be something or change my life, I have to go to college, which is to have that insight at that young of an age is incredible.
I told you, man, old soul. I was like in ninth grade and my friends would be like, and this was what people don't understand is that I had planned that since I was like in seventh grade, since I started playing basketball. So friends would ask me to hang out and I'd be like, no, I can't. I gotta practice. Well, you just have practice. No, I have to get to college. You don't understand. I have a plan.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. And that drive is going to do you wonders in life. That's good for you.
Thank you.
You had mentioned a moment ago about, you know, but you were so shy, and that's where this is where the comparisons, the parallels between you and I stop. You talk about how you were shy. Yeah. You have stage fright. I was the complete opposite. I was just the class clown. I loved being in front of people. I loved all of that. Mm-hmm. And you know, you talked about in the bio that you played all over Pittsburgh in 2018, 2019 to get over your stage fright. And you really had, that's something you really had to work at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was something that I had to force myself to do. And I would be so scared, like shaking, sweating, feeling like I was going to throw up, feeling like I was about to cry, probably up until like 2019. Yeah. It took Wow. me a while, and I wanted to keep going. I wanted to keep getting better. And then it somehow developed into, you know, going from basement shows in Pittsburgh where I'm booked with all guys, all rappers, to me singing at a nice restaurant like Eddie V's with jazz musicians. And like, to me, that's a huge compliment because I haven't had voice lessons and I don't know how to read music and I couldn't tell you what key I sing in. So the fact that I was invited to sing with such talented musicians, and I know who they are, I know who they play with, I know where they play. And the fact that they reached out to me and wanted me to be a part of that. And then Eddie V's asked me to bring my band and us to sing there. Like, That was a crazy, beautiful moment for me. The first time I sang at Eddie V's in Pittsburgh, I actually started crying before I went on, but this time, like, tears of joy, because when I was a little girl, you play, you know, Life or House or whatever when you're a kid, dramatic play. And I was a waitress and a teacher and a singer. And I went to school for early childhood education and special education. I'm currently working full-time at a YMCA as a child care coordinator. And then at night when I would play, I sang in these jazz clubs and lounges. And it would be super intimate and, you know, moody lighting, things like that. And I sing in Eddie V's, and it was moody lighting, lounge vibes, small group of people, bar, very, you know, high class. And I was like, oh my God, I'm a teacher by day. I am singing in a nightclub at night, and I actually still work at a restaurant sometimes. And I was like, I didn't even realize that I made all of my dreams come true. And the only reason I liked working in a restaurant was to write down people's orders. I just loved, like, getting those fake checks as a kid and stuff, and like handing it out to my stuffed animals. So it's just crazy how things you visualize as a child, if you do it consistently, what you can accomplish, like, through your life, and not even realize that you're trying to do it. You just do it.
Yeah. You've accomplished your calling. That is so cool. You know, right now, nobody is able to tour, so to speak, but, do you have any futures, future plans to take this out on the road and tour or anything?
Oh, absolutely. Sadly, before this all happened, I was actually setting some things up, and we had been booked in New York, LA, Seattle, DC. We were going back to Chicago. We were going back to Philly. So there were things that were bubbling. I had just gotten my first headlining spot at the main stage at Smalls. Like, things were starting to move forward. And I'm so grateful for where I work, because they were so supportive, and they still are. They're so supportive of my music. And I remember my boss being like, Sierra, this is the year you're going to leave us and go on tour. And I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm happy for you.
Aw, well, hopefully this clears up sooner and later, and you can get back out to do that. You know, we're going to wrap up here. I want to thank you for taking the time out and speaking to us. My producer, Chris, is from Pittsburgh, and he kept telling me about you. He just said, you got to hear this person's songs. You got to. And he just talked you up, and I listened to the track Grown, and I love it. And I'm so glad that you're able to make some time to talk to us.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Is there anything you'd like to leave the listeners with? Tell them how they can find you on social media, where to find your music on streaming sites, etc. Plug away.
Yeah. So, I mean, social media, you can find me. I'm most active on Instagram. So if you just search Sierra Sellers on Instagram or Twitter, you can find me. And you can find my music on all platforms, Spotify, iTunes, Bandcamp, all of them. I just click all when I distribute my music. So I have a bunch of stuff on YouTube. I have some things that I'm working on that shows you a little bit more behind the scenes with my band and I. So thank you so much again for having me and giving me this opportunity to share my experiences and my music. I'm so grateful for that. Thank you. You're part of making my dreams come true.
So. Oh, that means a lot. And nothing but the best of luck to you. Wish you all the best. And I hope to see you live someday.
Thank you. I hope so too.
All right, Sierra. Thank you.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know, where each week I will preview a select band of my choice that you may or may not know. If you'd like your band to be previewed on Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is submit your song and bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. All I ask for is a good quality recording of a song you feel best represents your band. And today's featured band is Faintest Idea from the East Anglian region of Great Britain. These guys take the bouncing beat of two-tone ska and smash it over the head with fast, angry UK punk. I'm hearing the Specials here mixed with Voodoo Clow Skulls and Skank-a-Pickle Horn Lines with a touch of Op Ivy. This stuff is killer. These guys are great. You can find their music on Spotify. And here's a snippet of their track, Stomp Them Down.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
So I absolutely loved that episode. I think it may have been my personal favorite because it was cool to hear you talk to somebody outside of the world of rock. All of your guests so far have been, whether they were in the punk rock and ska world or just rock in general, it was all rock music. So it was cool to hear somebody from outside of that world.
You know, Chris, yeah, I like a good song. I like a good story. I really don't care what genre it is, and I hope the listeners feel that way. I was fascinated by Sierra's story, and you know, I got to ask you. I know we talked a little bit about it when you had initially brought her up to be on the show, but you know, she's a Pittsburgh native where you're from. How did you initially hear about Sierra?
It was my buddy and Punchline bandmate Steve who told me, "Hey, you got to check out this." It was the NPR Tiny Desk concert. It was her entry for that, and she had like an amazing performance, which I'm going to post in our Facebook group and stuff for, so people can see. He knows I love R&B music, and he knows me and him both know when we hear an artist or a band, we know when the other guy's really going to like that. And so he sent it to me, and I was like, yep, you're right. I love this. And, you know, I'm from Pittsburgh, but I haven't got to see her play live yet, but now I'm a huge fan, so that's why I told you about her. I think that she has a real shot of becoming more than just a Pittsburgh artist, but known nationally and internationally. She has an amazing voice. I love her songs, and you know, I love all styles of music, and R&B is a personal favorite.
No, and her voice is amazing, and you know, who knows what could happen with her career. I mean, we've seen in this business, you just never know. And the great thing, I want to let our listeners know, Chris had brought her up to me and said, look, I want to get her on Krista Makes a Podcast and say we had her first before she blows up. And I thought that was a really cool angle to give someone a shot in a sense. And I really love the song. I genuinely thought it was a great song. Her voice is amazing. And she had a great story. There was a lot of parallels between her upbringing and music and her family with mine that I thought was fascinating as well.
Right. Yeah, that was really cool. And you know, I love a song that's based around a bass groove.
For sure. No, and it was really cool how she talked about how, you know, she had the other guys, her production team essentially, come up with this groove, and that she wrote her lyrics based around that. And it just goes to show you that everybody comes from songwriting at different angles, and that's what I love about it. I love that no two people write a song the same way. It's great.
Right. And once again, we talk about this all the time, but it wasn't a song that she had spent a lot of time thinking and agonizing over the lyrics. It was what came to her naturally. And I think that is just a running theme on this podcast. Week to week, we're hearing that time and time again, where people go with their natural instinct. And, you know, songs are written quickly that way. And I know, Sierra, it was a few hours, and this song was, you know, written and recorded. And I think that makes for a great song when you don't overthink it.
It does. And that human emotion that we all have, that resonates. It resonates with people. And that's why those songs seem to work the best. And that was really cool that she talked about that. And it came from a point where she was not very happy with her boyfriend, which definitely can help from a lyrical standpoint.
Yeah, for sure, man. Everybody can relate to those type of relationship songs. I know there's a lot of them out there, and there's going to continue to be a lot of them, because when it all comes down to it, yeah, you could be thinking about your job, you could be thinking about the world, but it's those inner sort of feelings and personal things that everyone's always going to latch onto and relate to. And I'm always going to love a great relationship or a love song.
Yeah. You know, and I want to thank our listeners. Most of you guys are really open-minded, and I thank you for that. a lot of you know me from the punk and ska background, but the fact that you're giving other artists a chance on the show is great, because I don't just want to be pigeonholed. I just want to talk to people that write great songs, and your feedback in the podcast group on Facebook has been amazing, and most of you have been receptive to having artists that you may or may not know, and I thank you for that.
Yeah, it's been really cool to see people say, like, oh, I hadn't heard The Bomb Pops, or I hadn't heard Bayside, which, you know, it's strange to me that people hadn't heard those bands, but those are two that I saw people comment, like, I hadn't listened to them before, and then they listened to the podcast, and now they're fans, and I think we're going to get some of those with Sierra as well, and I think it was another great episode, as I often say. otherwise, in other business, we got just a little bit of time left on the charity for this month, which is Big Brothers, Big Sisters of the Laurel Region. And you guys have been very generous and amazing so far.
Yeah, thank you so much. You know, each month, for those listeners that don't know, we're doing a charity. It's going to run for 4 weeks during that month. So the September charity was the Big Brothers, Big Sisters of the Laurel Region, which is in the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area. And you guys have been, like Chris said, just so generous. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. It's been a slow year for a lot of charitable organizations because of everything that's gone on. And all the donations and proceeds are going to go to great causes. We want to thank you very much. And we'll be rolling out another charity in a couple weeks, and be on the lookout for that. And you know, I'd like to also thank each and every one of you out there who has hit me up for one-on-one video consultations. I've been producing and a lot of songs, collaborating on your songs with you, with just individuals and with more than one person, band members sitting in on the Zoom live one-on-one sessions, and they've been great. So I want to work on your song with you. I want you to take your song till the 11th hour, get it as far as you can, bring it to me, and I'd like to tighten the screws on it and hopefully make it even a little bit better. So if you'd like more information on that, please write me at chrisdemakes@gmail.com, and yeah, we'll get cracking on one of your songs.
Hell yeah, man. I hope everybody loved this week's episode like I did. And if anyone wants to contribute to this month's charity, you can go to chrisdemakesadifference.com.
Absolutely. We can't wait to see you till next week. Thanks for listening. See you then.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock Podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.